podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by 99designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of 200,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free design consultation. That's 99designs.com/AAA. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 114, recorded on Tuesday, June 18th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Gina Trapani.
Yes, and even though the three of us are here, I'm just going to go right out on a limb and say it's actually kind of two and a half of us.
Yes.
I'm barely here right now.
It's a bit of a rough week for you, isn't
it,
Jason?
It's just a bit of a rough Tuesday. Yeah. I actually ended up going home early yesterday.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I was here in the morning. I was like, you know what? I really shouldn't be here.
So we're going to be doing our best to carry Jason through the show. We've already warned the chat room, so no shenanigans this week for the live viewers.
Yes, sparkling cyanide has been called out specifically.
Yes, so we're watching you.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll do our best to carry you, Jason. That's why we're here. Me and Gina have got your back.
That's right. I feel confident that with you guys as my backup. Yeah. But we also have another couple of people actually to welcome to the show. And I'm not sure if this is the first time we've had two guests at the same time, but we are very excited to welcome Bill Phillips and Brian Hardy of the Big Nerd Ranch. Welcome to the show, you guys.
Thanks. We're really happy to be here.
It's awesome to have you here. I appreciate the green, at least partially. It seems to be the show colors, so, you know. And
it's on brand.
Yeah,
it's good. We like it. Yeah.
Exactly. But now you guys are both instructors at the Big Nerd Ranch. Kind of explain a little bit about what you do there.
We spend a lot of time consulting and instructing, so we during our day jobs here in Atlanta, we write apps, and then we go out to, you know, our place in the woods or out at corporate clients and teach folks a lot. So we teach Android programming, and we have an awesome beginner Android course where we basically take you through zero to a functioning Android programmer in about 5 days, 4.5 days or so. It's pretty intense and awesome.
That's great. And I know we have a lot, you know, obviously a lot of people that follow the show are developers already, but there's also probably as many people following the show that would love to get into it or have had a great idea about what a great app could be. So this might be the perfect way for them to get started.
We have come up with numerous genius ideas
on
the show that we've given to the community, and I'm still waiting to see another one come to fruition. We've seen a couple of apps from our community.
Yeah.
We get behind the local All About Android community and their development efforts. So if this makes more developers out of it, that's even better. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you again for joining us, guys. And we're going to talk a little bit about the book that you guys are just putting out in a little bit. But first, let's dive into some of the news that we have. I know. By the way, Jason
totally just did a rundown bomb that got me to laugh when I read something. So
I went ahead and changed the heading for today's news section to not really news, but it's all we got.
There's some good stuff. I mean, one of the more interesting stories, maybe not huge headline, but an interesting story this week. Steve Kondik, who's also known as, or is it Kondik, also known as Cyanogen, the creator of CyanogenMod, he posted something kind of interesting to his Google Plus page. He said that he's working on a Cyanogen incognito mode, which would basically be, which, you know, you've heard of incognito mode in Chrome. This is a system-wide Android or Cyanogen incognito mode that would basically mask your data across all apps, kind of a layer that would make it seem to apps that wanted personal information like your GPS location or your contacts or, you know, that kind of thing, would make it look as if, you know, you had your GPS disabled, or make it look as if your calendar was empty or your contacts didn't exist. So it'd be kind of a way to use native apps that request request system level permissions and personal data permissions, but this incognito mode would actually just feed it, you know, blank data, essentially. So kind of interesting. I love to see this kind of thing, because this is just the kind of thing that you can do on Android. It's very timely, given the NSA story that just came out, you know, last week. I really, really like this. So again, this was just a post on his Google Plus page. There's one screenshot there. You can see it looks like a system settings page saying, hey, you know, enable incognito mode. This is exciting. What do you guys think?
I think it's interesting. My question goes to the developers, and this is a perfect day to kind of ask this question, which is, how do developers feel about users having this kind of access? Because I know, obviously, from a developer standpoint, some developers are probably a little bit looser as far as like the permissions they need in order to run their apps. And I know as users, the reason this even exists is because users are saying, well, why do you need access to that in order to do this single-use app? But on the developer side, if they actually need that, like if Facebook, in order to do something properly, you know, needs access to location for something specific, how does the developer feel about that?
Are you kneecapping the app by doing this?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, it's interesting to see like what it actually feeds to the app. So if it tells me that location services are turned off, that's pretty straightforward. But if it tells me that's something else, wrong data, that could be fun. You know, maybe. I think it would be more interesting, really, if it told you data that was just spurious. Like, I have NSA headquarters right now.
Yeah, what makes us our jobs harder as developers is, you know, not really necessarily that they can do that, but the fact that that means that we have to write more code to support a different kind of a device that may be operating a different way than it normally would. Mm-hmm. This kind of makes a little more work for us, but, you know, that's always the challenge when the user can do more with the device, too.
Yeah. I think this whole thing is cool. To Gina's point, it's cool because it's something that you can do in Android that you have the ability to. But as I'm reading it and looking at it, I'm wondering why. Like, is it something that you actually need? Now, I get incognito mode on the browser side because you might want to hide your browsing history, or you're looking at porn and you want to hide it from your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. You know, like, I get all the reasons that incognito mode exists on the browser side. But why on the app level? I mean, like, Gina, you said like, this is really cool to see. But, like, you know, to a certain degree, aren't most applications been made to use those services to make the app better, to enhance it?
Well, right. Yeah. Yes, in theory, that's true. I mean, look, I'm a user. I inspect my permissions all the time, and I'm a developer. And I actually just issued an update to my app, and it involved asking for another permission. And I feel like there's a giant failing in the Android permissions model. I mean, on one hand, it's great that it lets you know up front what permissions it needs for an app to run. On the other hand, I hate that there are optional features inside your apps that need these permissions that you have to grant at the get-go. You know, if I'm never going to share my location with Facebook, I don't have the option to say, no, I don't ever want Facebook to be able to read my GPS. I wish that Android's permission model will let users install the app with the absolute minimum number of permissions that it needs to run at all, say access to the internet. And then in the course of my using the app, when I go to check in, you know, to a place, for example, on Facebook, for it to pop up and say, hey, can this app access your GPS location or not? I mean, I don't want to put us into a Windows Vista situation where it's, you know, constant, you know, right. Dialogue boxes popping up and saying, can I, you know, you have permission to do this? Can I have permission to do that? But I do hate, as a developer and as a user, I hate that I have to upfront agree to give, you know, give access to personal data that for apps that sometimes I'm like, you know what, there's no reason why Pandora needs, you know, my address book, for example. You know, if I don't share lists, you know, playlists from Pandora, for example, this makes no sense, but I have to do it in order to install the app to begin with.
So what you're saying is that permissions, it needs to be a more of a selected permissions model where you can, you know,
What I would like.
It tells you what permissions are available and would you want to know why they're using them? I mean, because from a developer standpoint, I can understand Pandora wants to know your context because it wants you to hit share Pandora and spread it out and that sort of thing. But to be able to say no on that level, would that be better?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the thing, though. I don't want to make the decision up front. Like, when I'm installing an app, I'm not going to look at a list of a dozen permissions and be like, yes, this one, no, that one. I just want to be able to install the app. This is the other thing, is like, when you install an app, you have to be kind of paranoid. You have to think about it. Do I trust this company? Can I imagine a reason why they'd need this permission? I mean, this is the other thing. As a developer, you don't get to explain in the beginning, like, I'm asking for this because, you know, or our share feature, for example. So as a user, I just want minimum permissions, yes, install. And then when I go do something that's a little, you know, different, like checking in our Facebook or sharing a playlist, then I would like to see it pop up and say, does this app have access to your contacts? If so, we can continue. If not, then we can't.
Right. I mean, I don't know. The thing about the location, everyone's always, this is, we've had this argument before, and I know I come out on an unpopular side of things, especially with the development community. But when it comes to the privacy stuff and location stuff, is that, like, I look at it and say, okay, if an app's asking for my location, it's using my location to give me better results or to give me something more than a blind kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, who gives a crap that everyone knows I'm in Petaluma? You know what I mean? Like, I've got nothing to hide, so I've got nothing to be fearful of. Now, I know in this period of the NSA and Prism and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, everyone wants to protect their privacy and protect their data, but my data is really boring, and I think the majority of people's mm-hmm. is boring as well, too. And so this idea of putting, hiding your phone in tinfoil and keep protecting it from, you know, the apps and things like that, I just feel like you're already limiting what the potential of the device is and can be,
mm-hmm.
you know, by wanting to go incognito by that. I don't know. I'm playing devil's advocate to a certain degree too. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think obviously the desire for something like this comes out of just the fact that Android at its core is a tinkerer's kind of platform,
yeah.
you know, by large
exactly,
degree.
Yeah. You can't you can do it doesn't mean, yeah,
exactly,
which is neat.
Exactly,
yeah,
and
yeah,
it's yeah. kind of like, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could? Because yeah. there was that one time that I downloaded this app that I didn't want it to know, you know, the phone numbers in my address book, and yeah. But I like the app, and, you know, kind of like you say, Gina, still want to use the app, but don't want to use that functionality. This gives you the ability to kind of manage that. So we'll see I'll be curious to see how that kind of plays out from a functional standpoint. If it totally makes the usability of those apps go right. through the floor, it probably won't continue to be very popular, right? So the Nexus 7, it's been about a year since we all kind of heralded its release as one of the best tablets to hit the scene. Not 1 year later, people are actually changing their tune. There was an article on Android and Me, and it seemed to spur a lot of discussion around just kind of devices in general. Now this article is directed at the Nexus 7, obviously, and with a headline saying 1 year later, the Nexus 7 has gone from the best to worst tablet I've ever owned. And basically complaining that, you know, in less than a year, the performance has gone from great to, you know, extended period of lag, touch responsiveness has gone through the floor, stuttering UI. And it kind of made me think of the Galaxy Nexus that I'm kind of stuck with right now and mm-hmm. using, right? I don't know, a year and a half into having the Galaxy Nexus, I still feel like the hardware that's underneath it is pretty, you know, packs a decent punch. It's not necessarily archaic and outdated in the way that the Droid was when it was at a year and a half and everything yeah. else was so much further beyond it. Yet I still have the same issues with it, right?
Something happens. It's like, I mean, like, we know the batteries get worse over time as they charge and decharge and all stuff like
that's
that. But yeah. it also feels like the longer you have a device, something happens and it gets sluggish and it gets annoying. And even though you've uninstalled apps and you've cleared the cache or something like that, something is going on.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if it's perception, if it's the kind of thing where
it's not perception.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I think that there's something to this. You know, it's been a year now with my Nexus 7 and I love it. I think it's great. But I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I think before, in the pre-show, I was talking about how I've got that weird audio drop 30 minutes into using it, which apparently is a battery problem, and you got to replace the battery for it to work.
Oh.
But that just started happening recently.
Audio and battery?
That's what they claim. That's what the
weird.
Chat room claimed. Yeah, yeah, very
weird.
Bizarre. But I'm starting to notice little things like that, too. And after reading this, I'm starting to get a little worried about the long life of my Nexus 7.
Yeah, so Bill, Brian, do either of you have the Nexus 7, or have you kind of noticed this kind of issue with devices in general?
I think the thing, well, so we have a Nexus 7 among many other test devices
yeah,
around.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We haven't noticed that specifically, or at least I haven't, but one thing that I think is maybe a general problem is that developers that are working on the platform are working generally on, like, the latest hardware or maybe something that hasn't even been released and it's fast. And so they optimize mostly for the new thing. And then they make sure that it works well on the older things. But as OS updates, you know, continue, it may not be that those old devices get as much love as they could. Obviously, they're testing to make sure that it's functional, but maybe not as high performance as it once was.
Sure, sure. And that's on an app level. When you're talking about the OS lying underneath and that kind of slowing down too, could have some sort of, you know, some sort of link with the apps as well. One thing that I found in a Reddit kind of thread that was about this and related to this post that I thought was interesting, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's one of those things that's like news to me, but everybody else knows this, but it kind of pointed something out to me that I'm happy I read it. User Kalen XI put it, I thought, pretty well by saying all flash memory has a limited number of erase write operations that can be done before it can no longer be read reliably. And as the I/O controller has to do more and more error correction to compensate for the increase in error rate, your read rate goes down. Goes on to say that there's this garbage collection that isn't happening over the course of that amount of time, right? Flash memory must be empty before it can be written to. Garbage collection is supposed to kind of clean it up so that it's empty when it needs to be written to. But when that isn't happening, anytime an app or anything needs to write to it, it has to first erase it and then write into it.
Yep.
And that can kind of slow it down. Just thought that was kind of an interesting explanation. I'm not sure. I'm not smart enough to know whether that's exactly what's going on here, but that sounds pretty darn good.
That would have to be a device that's under heavy usage, I'd imagine. You know, our like Brian was saying, we do have a lot of test devices that are kind of wide variety. I mean, I don't think we see a lot of this kind of issue. Do you think, Brian?
Yeah, we don't. But again, we're not using most of them day to day.
Exactly.
Right. Whatever we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and filling up all of that space the way you would, you know, when you've had a device for more than a year, you're going to put a lot of stuff on it. You're going to take a lot of stuff off of it. So maybe it's just a different use case entirely. But anyways, interesting kind of discussion, and I haven't noticed it on the Nexus 7 that my wife has, but she isn't loading a ton of stuff on it and off of it all the time.
Yep, I mean, I've got heavy use, and I haven't noticed as extreme. I wouldn't say it's gone from the best tablet to the worst tablet,
right.
But I have noticed age. I have, like, there, and what's funny is that I first started noticing, actually, my Dodo case is starting to get a little rough around the edges.
When
I first noticed that, I was like, oh, wow, and then I was like, I must use it a lot, and then I started getting that weird audio drop, and then I've noticed a little bit of the stuttering and stuff like that, and so, yeah, maybe it's a case of, I mean, and as we get these new devices, we don't know what the long life will look like, and also we don't know what the lifespan is that, you know, like it used to be that you bought a TV, like my parents bought a TV in 1987 and we had it until 2003. Mm-hmm. Like you used to have TVs for 20 years. Now I know people who go through TVs like every year or two, you know. So
my TV is 7 years old and I feel like it's ancient.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
So, am I gonna get a new one? No, probably not. But I still feel like it's ancient.
Yeah, so we don't know what the lifespan of these are. Maybe it's not meant to last more than 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
So
probably part of it right there.
Maybe we have smartphones that are like embedded in furniture, like the old TVs in the 50s and 60s were, just for some permanence like that, right?
Console smartphones.
Yes.
I like the idea of that. Well, cool. So, okay, so we kind of teased it up at the top here, and we obviously have on the table these gigantic books here. You guys have to be proud about the amount of information that you crammed into this book, Android Programming, the Big Nerd Ranch Guide. Both of you guys are the authors of this book, and I noticed kind of in the forward, Gina, you have a copy as well.
Yes, I do.
I noticed in the forward you thank a lot of people for this, but I have to imagine this took you guys a while to put together. Explain a little bit about just kind of the book in general and what you're kind of accomplishing, what your goal is by releasing this.
So our goal with the book was to take Android programming, which there's a lot of great information out there. There's a lot of stuff on the internet. And there are a lot of awesome books out there. They are fantastic. We really can't say any bad things about the books that are out there, but they don't really pull it together into something that is really coherent and goes from the beginning to the end like we really wanted to. Mm-hmm. We're starting off our Android class here, and we looked at some other options, some other stuff out there, and we're like, you know, these are great, but they don't really fit what we need to do, which we really wanted to introduce people to how to actually write programs and get things up and running in a pretty good way with best practices
and all that kind of stuff, good stuff in there. So really, you know, meaty tutorials that show you how to write real programs. That's the big idea of the book. So it starts off, if you open up to the very first page with the introduction, it starts you off right there in Eclipse with the very first screen saying, here's creating an application. So it starts off at the very, very basics and then goes from there. So you'll see that first chapter is, you know, really, really straightforward, first principles kind of stuff. And then we go and build from there. So each chapter introduces some concept, and we usually build on an app, have kind of extended exercises, and move on from that. We end up covering a whole lot of material in the book, as you can imagine. But we've put a lot of work into trying to cover the newest, the latest, and greatest Android stuff with techniques like we try and be very heavily fragment-based in our applications. And what else do we do there? We focus so much on the fundamentals. But that's our big idea behind it. Like I said, it's really our it's how we get people to learn so much in 5 days in our class, and we think that it's really great out there, and we hope that people really like it.
So what knowledge level do you have to have? I mean, like, so for example, I failed C++ in high school. I taught myself HTML.
I didn't know that. You're on the show and you failed.
I know. And I taught myself HTML and JavaScript. I know just enough to get myself in trouble. Can I use this to learn how to code an Android app? Or do I need
You're going to need Java experience at the beginning of the book. So we don't teach you Java programming. But if you have, you know, if you're slightly rusty on Java, you're probably going to be okay. We don't explain everything, but if you have another reference to the side, you'll probably be able to get through it. The book is, as I said, it's structured in tutorials. And so the idea is that you go through and you actually type in all the code that you're going to write. So we show you exactly the code you're going to write. And if you're at a level where you can read that code and go, oh, yeah, okay, I get what's going on with that, then you should be really comfortable to start off with our book.
So I've managed Java developers. I can manage Android developers then. So that's kind of, all right, that's what I'm figuring out here. Excellent. I'm good. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Okay. Yeah, no, it's great. It looks right. I'm just flipping through the book, and there's a lot of great screenshots and a lot of great.
It's incredibly thorough.
Yeah.
And
that I'm really proud of about the book is the way we structured it to be like a modern, current, good way to develop Android apps. I know a lot of the materials that you would see were focused on, you know, this is the current version of the API, and here's how you do this specific thing on, you know, certain versions of Android. And this book really takes it where, like, all the examples we have work from either API level 8 or 9 all the way to the newest thing equally well. And we talk a lot about backwards compatibility, a lot about the real-world kind of scenarios that you're going to see when you're deploying the app and you have this wide range of operating systems. Google's provided some great resources to make developers' lives a little bit easier in that respect, and we fully embrace that mode of doing things. So I like the fact that it's very practical and real-world in that respect.
Excellent. Gina, you received a copy, I think, over the weekend anyways. What did you think of it?
The book looks great. I mean, I really think that people ask me all the time about how to start programming or how to learn how to start programming. And the answer is, like, you just got to sit down and work through, you know, quality, up-to-date kind of tutorials. And like you said, there's tons of stuff out on the web. And so, you get through Hello World. And then what, right? And so that's what I like about a book like this, is that it's a narrative, and you progress through, you know, through the tutorials and get more stuff done. It's good. You know, it's tough. Like, having the Java prerequisite is a little hard. I actually dove into an iOS programming book like a year or so ago, and it was kind of the same thing. Like, you should have some Objective-C experience. But, like, right now, most people want to program Java because they want to write for Android, right? Like, Android is kind of like the platform for writing Java. So that can get, I think, a little harder, a little intimidating for beginners. But no, the book looks great. And Yeah, I think I've sort of been a fly by the seat of my pants Android developer, where I just like Google the hell out of Stack Overflow and just read the docs and try and figure it out and pull my hair out. But I think I'm going to work my way through this book, because there's definitely stuff that you guys cover in a kind of logical narrative that would fill in a lot of holes for me. So nice work on it. And I was saying before the show, you could like lay the foundation of a house with this thing. It's
yes. We do consider it a foundational text in many respects. Yes.
One of the hard, tough things about writing a technical book, and I've published, I think, four tech books at this point, is that, like, your heart kind of breaks when new stuff gets announced. Like, one of my big pieces of advice for people who, like, are buying tech books is my first thing is, like, look at the published date. So I see the published date is March 2013 for this book, which is awesome, super recent. But, like, when Google gets on stage and announces something like Android Studio, doesn't your heart just break? Because you're like, oh, you know, all the examples in the book are eclipsed. But, you know, the truth is that if you master it in one, you know, it's about concepts. It's not about, like, click this button here. You know, I mean, things move around in software faster than books get published. And that was tough for me to reckon with. But it's fine. I mean, you know, you figure it out once you get a sense of what you're doing. You can find it if the button moved in the UI or whatever.
Well, I got to say, like, for me, at least, that's kind of like me. I get excited about that stuff, which is kind of weird, because you're right. It is you. Yeah, we just did have this book released, and things continue to move forward. But, you know, it's partly getting it out there. One reason we wanted to release the book is that we do, for our own classes, we're constantly keeping these materials up to date all the time. But we don't want this to be just limited to what we teach in our classes. We want people to have access to this everywhere and not just have to go to our classes to get it. So we had to kind of, you know, at some point draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we're going to release something and have people see this. But we can't. I'm very excited about all the new developments also.
Now, Big Nerd Ranch, you guys offer a lot more than just obviously Android programming. You, I mean, it's as the name implies. It's
a big nerd ranch.
Yeah, a lot of instruction around just kind of nerdy things, which all the listeners and fans of this show, anyways, will completely appreciate. Is there something that you offer in the ways of Java? I have to imagine there is, so that if someone is truly interested in getting started with Android programming, they have a place to start with Big Nerd Ranch.
We don't have anything right now.
Nothing in Java.
We have sort of a sketch of something, but one of the things that I guess a lot of our learning curriculum comes from the great Aaron Hillegas, who is our paycheck author, and he is of the mind that, you know, a lot of people learn Java in some existing curriculum that they might take high school or college. And there's just a lot of great published information about Java out there. And so we haven't focused on that historically, just because there was already a wealth of knowledge to be had for free. But, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. We have some, you know, sketches of things, outlines in the works and so forth.
That's a big thing, is that, you know, if somebody asks us for a great Java book, we can tell you off the top of our head, like, totally. That first great book, you know. And again, we're not ruling out in the future, but there's awesome stuff out there if you're interested in learning it.
Yeah, turns out Java's been around for a long time. There's a lot of places you can go to figure that out. So
for sure. It has.
Excellent. So obviously we've had a lot of people in the chat room like, this sounds great. How much is it? Where can people find it? How much does it cost? How about all the details?
Book or the class?
Both. Well, yeah, actually both. Because, both. I mean, it's worth re-emphasizing anyways that this book is formed around a 5-day class taught at the Big Nerd Ranch. So this is kind of like getting a class in a book. It's very full of information. So how about both?
Well, the book is obviously available on Amazon at bargain price. So you definitely check it out there. It's bignerdranch.com. There's a link to it there as well.
I think it's $31 right now. They change it all the time.
The Amazon pricing is insane. But our class is an intensive 4.5-day boot camp that we host in the normal case. Like, if an individual wants to come take our class, we would host them. It's all inclusive, meals, lodging, everything. Wow. Is very nice. And you're kind of secluded in the woods or at the beach and studying Android.
That sounds
for
nice.
4.5 days.
This sounds amazing.
Wow.
I'm gonna go to one of these classes.
Hey, listen, if you guys do a Java class, sign me up for the beach one. Put it by the beach. I'll learn Java, then I'll take the Android class. We'll be all set.
Well, they want special for you, man. Don't worry.
Yeah, I feel like a crazy person when I talk about our classes. I feel like a weird chill because I think they're so awesome. We recently merged with the company Highgroove, right? And so those folks over there are kind of seeing what we're all about and what we do. And one of them went to our one of our classes recently, and he came back. And this is a guy who's a really, you know, he's a developer who could teach me a few things, absolutely. And I was talking to him on Monday, and he's like, "Man, I am drained. My brain is beat because we'll go through almost all 600 pages of that Android book in just 4.5 days." Which you may think, how do we do that? And it's simply just cut away all the distractions,
yeah,
and have around other people who want to learn the stuff. When you're around people who want to do the same thing that you do, it's fun, you know. It's you get a lot done. It's awesome. I could go on for an hour.
That is awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun and a great environment to learn these kind of topics. It's not easy to pick this stuff up, I have to imagine. I mean, it's way over my head, so I assume it's not easy. But, yeah, this is a great approach.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's funny, flipping through the book, you said how, like, if you can read the language, like, I recognize some of it from the programming experience I have, but Lord knows I can't do it. Like, it's kind of like how I can hear Italian, but I can't speak it very well. So, yeah.
This is very much like an immersion class.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So if you wanted to learn Italian, you would go stay in Italy for a week, right?
Exactly.
All right. So we do have some good news. I know that you guys were planning on kind of giving out a couple of copies of these to the listeners and fans of the show. What's awesome. The information that they need in order to get in on that?
Oh, yeah. They need to tweet #BNR
Android. There it is.
There it is. Oh, yeah. Check it out.
So do that, tweet that, and then we collect all those tweets and choose one lucky winner. I think one. Yeah. Let's not overpromise. And we will give away a book to that awesome person.
Excellent.
Cool. Also on Google Plus, right? So tweet or Google Plus.
Right.
Yes. Correct.
Awesome.
Excellent. #BNR Android. BNR for Big Nerd Ranch Android. Tweet or Google Plus. Awesome.
Case sensitive.
You.
Make sure you capitalize that A in Android or you won't win.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, your hashtag will be illegible.
Like. Right. Exactly. There you go. So.
Right on. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations on finishing the book. That is no small feat. Absolutely. And, can't wait to find out who gets a copy for themselves and to see what kind of apps are created as a result of that.
I can't wait for that part.
I know, right?
That's my favorite part.
Go into our back catalog and find the many random app ideas that we've thrown out.
So many. One of those. Millions of dollars given to you, and now you have a book. Go make them.
Yeah, do it. Okay. Awesome. Well, let's take a quick break and thank one of our sponsors, 99 Designs. We talked about them on the show before. They are great. They connect the world to great graphic designers. This could actually come in handy with the app that you're going to create here. 99 Designs allows you to create fast and affordable graphic designs by using their community of graphic designers. So if you're not a graphic designer yourself, you can actually tap into the world of 99 Designs and get them to do the hard work for you. You tell them what you need. Dozens of designers from the community submit quality designs created for you. Give the designers your feedback, help them refine the designs, and then you select and pay for your favorite. It's a really simple process, and it gives you a lot of options. More than 200,000 graphic designers worldwide who are available to work with your project. World-class customer support, that's 24/7, over the phone, email, and chat. They have complimentary design consultations, 100% money-back guarantee, and they just hit a ton of different categories, things like logo design, web design, digital marketing materials, print marketing materials like brochures and flyers, apparel designs, T-shirts, all that kind of stuff. And mobile app design, of course, is the last one, and that could absolutely tie into that great app that you'd like to create. We actually use 99 Designs to help commission Twit logo designs for a marketing product, and we ended up with an awesome design for a T-shirt that we've sold quite a few. I've seen a lot of people tweeting and sending us photos of people wearing the newly designed Twit logo shirt. There it is on the screen there. And you know, this was all operated through the 99 Designs community. So it's just a really great way to generate a lot of interesting ideas and pick the one that you like the best for whatever you're trying to create. So you can start right now if you'd like for as low as $199. You can get your own custom graphic design. Visit 99designs.com/AAA. You'll get a $99 power pack of services for free. And a power pack actually gives you more designer time, attention. They're going to bold, highlight, and feature your design product in 99 Designs Marketplace. You're actually going to get nearly twice as many designs as a result as well. You can also call 800-513-1678, designated for TWIT listeners. That's 800-513-1678. We'll do it one more time. Sure, that's what they do in the evening shows. 800-513-1678. Or you can do what most of us are going to do, and that's visit the website at 99designs.com/AAA. today. Thank you so much, 99 Designs, for your support of All About Android and the TWIT Network. You guys are great. All right, let's continue talking about newsy stuff. Let's get into hardware. This one's pretty quick. Because,
we teased it.
Yeah, we teased it last week. And of course, in true All About Android fashion, the very next day it actually gets officially announced. It's usually how it works. The Samsung Galaxy S4 Zoom. So that's the version of the S4 with the camera literally squashed into the back. And I think the rumored specs that we mentioned on last week's show were pretty much dead on, except for the 1.5 gigahertz dual core, which is what it ended up being as opposed to 1.6. Big deal there. But it is a difference, I guess. There's also optical image stabilization, a xenon flash, a special zoom ring, rather, that actually launches in-call photo sharing. It's photo suggest mode for suggesting great pictures taken by others in your area, which I think is kind of an interesting option. Anyways, it's set to release in the U.S. in Q4 2013. So if you have to have it, there you go.
I like the special zoom ring when twisted, even when on a call, launches in-call photo sharing.
Okay.
In-call photo sharing. Let's think about that.
Photo sharing.
Let's think about that. Right.
So you're on the phone and you can
share a photo you just took when you're on the phone with somebody? I don't know.
I suppose. You put it on speaker. Put it on speaker, go down to the touch screen, choose a photo, turn the ring, and then the person on their phone
gets it via MMS. I don't know.
Right, yeah, via MMS.
I'm really curious how this one's going to work out. I want to read some sort of review or some sort of usability thing. That is interesting.
You know how Samsung is. They throw a bunch of these little features in there, and they sound interesting to head-scratching on paper. And then in reality, you're like, okay.
They march to the beat of their own drum.
They absolutely
special
do.
Zoom ring. There you go. all right, well, moving on. The manufacturer whose name I cannot pronounce.
Huawei.
They launched in London. They had an event recently where they launched the Ascend P6. Which has got the moniker of the world's slimmest Android smartphone, and it's got a 5-megapixel front-facing camera. They had a premiere event in London just a couple of days ago, and they announced this is going to be 6.18 millimeter thick and comes with a 1.5 gigahertz quad-core processor in a sleek metallic body. It's got a 4.7-inch high-definition display. We don't know what the resolution is, and they describe the front-facing camera as an industry-leading 5-megapixel front-facing camera. And it's got an 8-megapixel camera on the back as well, capable of shooting aperture of just f2.0 with a 4-centimeter macro view, and it supports 1080p video recording and playback. It's going to be running with Android 4.2.2 and Huawei's custom Emotion UI overlay skin on top of Android, which actually is pretty interesting. You see in this video, they got this neat little scroller thing where you can choose different profiles, and it's got a bunch of it's actually got over 1,000 pre-generated skins that you can choose from when using it. This is kind of the gold kind of skin. They're clearly positioning this as kind of an elegant kind of upper class,
like a fashionable
phone. Yeah, fashionable phone
style phone.
Very, very interesting. As Jason informed me before the show, no clue when this will be available in the U.S., if ever.
Yeah. So. I mean, and that's kind of Huawei to a large degree. You know, they seem to create some interesting design and interesting hardware, but it just, you know, it's big in China. It's launching in China this month, Western Europe in July. They say other markets to follow soon. We'll see if the world's thinnest smartphone ends up making it to U.S. shores.
But that said, if Huawei can make a phone this thin, so can anybody. I guess. Yeah. So we're gonna if we're gonna start seeing phones get thinner and thinner and thinner, this could be the beginning. So we'll see how long they keep this world's thinnest phone moniker.
It's possible.
It's impossibly beautiful, Jason. It's impossibly beautiful.
Guys, I haven't heard a thing that you all have said. I'm mesmerized by this video.
Then I suppose that means that the Big Nerd Ranch might be seeing a Huawei Ascend P6 coming to its doors. For testing.
Yeah, probably a new stock phone for the office.
So that would be impossibly generous.
Excellent. Well, I think it looks interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. It's important to note that with the thinner phone, you do get less battery life. Because batteries are strong batteries need to be thick, and this one isn't. So there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's fair to make fun of the marketing, but I got to tell you, like, when you put the Zoom next to the Ascend, it's like, I know I'm going to sound really vain, but I would never buy the Zoom just because I'm never going to stick that thing in my pocket. It would be like sticking a boot in my pocket. Like, yeah. I want my phone to be thin. I want to be able to slide it in my jeans pocket and have it not look like a giant thing in my pants.
well said.
Sorry.
No. I think.
Come on.
I think you make a valid point.
It reminds me. It actually, just, as we were talking about, I can't even.
Ron.
I remember my old HTC Windows mobile phone was like a half an inch thick, and the fact that now we're at this, we're talking millimeters in terms of thickness. That's just crazy. So
yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Well, so while I change all colors of pink, let's talk about the Moto X phone. EV Leaks, on Twitter has a pretty good reputation of leaking details about upcoming hardware. They're saying the Moto X phone is going to have a 720p touchscreen display, 1.7 gigahertz dual-core Qualcomm Snapdragon S4 Pro processor, 2 gigabyte RAM, 16 gig storage, 10 megapixel camera, 2 megapixel front-facing camera, and Android 4.2.2 Jelly Bean. We don't know when this is coming out. Well, the Moto X was actually, it was confirmed at the All Things D event. And I think we're going to see this Q4 of 2013.
Yeah, I think it's like Q3, Q4 sometime. I got the impression by at least the end of the summer to begin with.
Yeah. And, you know, at All Things D, they were saying, hey, you know, we're trying to compete with the higher-end phones. But it's interesting. Android Authority was saying, you know, this is actually going to be kind of a mid-range by the time it gets released. These specs seem to be kind of mid-range. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, nothing too crazy or special here. I suppose a 10-megapixel camera is a lot. What do you guys think? A Moto X phone? Are you excited about it? Or do we feel like let's see until it's something more than just a rumor?
Yeah, well, definitely that, for sure. I've kind of felt all along, for the most part, that this was going to not necessarily be like a god phone, in air quotes, you know, that it was going to be something a little bit different, you know, save that for kind of the Nexuses, although I guess the jury's still out on whether Nexuses could be considered god phones, but that Motorola was just simply trying to do something different, and that the emphasis wasn't necessarily on having the biggest best specs as compared to everything that's possible right now.
There was going to be no way this was going to achieve the level of speculation that we had going into it. So I think that's it is what it is, and let it come out, see how it is, let it get confirmed, let's see how they do. And so I'm not terribly impressed, but it's a decent phone. It's pretty good. I'm still curious what Motorola is going to do, you know, long term. But
Yeah, after they flush out the 18 months worth of inventory. How far along that 18 months are we?
Exactly.
There's a lot to be said for making something well, even if the specs aren't super high. I mean, like, you know, the other major smartphone manufacturer that they make, you know, things that where they don't even publish the specs of the processor and nobody talks about it really except nerds. So it's all about how well it works. I think 10 megapixels is certainly plenty for handheld smartphone. If it's a beautiful camera that takes good pictures, 10 megapixels is way more than most people need. They're not making like wall-sized prints here.
Yeah, and I mean, even when you're talking about just kind of specs that open my eyes or make me look twice, megapixels has kind of fallen off that list
completely. Yeah. It's just commonplace now.
It's kind of like I don't care about the megapixels. I just want the pictures to look good, and I know that you can make pictures look good with lower megapixels. So do that instead.
Yep.
So that's, as far as that's concerned, it's all a specs race, but how much of it really matters?
Yep.
Exactly. As long as it performs well, and you have to hope that it at least will do that out of the gate. Let's take a quick voicemail, actually. Jonathan left us a voicemail. You can do so by leaving us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. We love getting your voicemails. Jonathan has a question about organizing photos.
Hey, AAA crew. This is Jonathan from Frederick, Maryland. I'm a longtime fan. I look forward to the show every week. Here's my question. I'm looking for a way to take a set of photos and then immediately tag, rename, or drop them into specific folders. I'm a landscaper, and I take a lot of client properties, pictures of client properties for estimates and designs. I've been using the Dropbox automatic upload, which is great, but the problem I find is that it's difficult sorting through the hundreds of photos to find the ones I need. If there was a way to quickly rename a group of photos or drop them into a new Dropbox folder with the client's name or address immediately after taking the photos, it would save me a lot of time on the back end finding the photos. Thanks, guys. Great show.
Yep. Probably a different, there's a few different ways that you go about this. Renaming it, the photos after the fact, I imagine you could do with most any, like Astro is the one that I use. Any of those file managers allow you to do bulk, allow you to rename and move a bunch of photos into a specific directory. If you, the way that I kind of ended up thinking about this is, why do the work at the end? Why not do it before you start taking pictures? If you're in a location, you can get an app like Camera Folders. And what that allows you to do is that allows you to actually set a folder that your pictures will be taken into. So when you get to your location, you create a new folder for it. And then every time you take a picture, it's placing those photos into that folder for you. You can also do the same thing for an app that I covered in the arena weeks ago called Fast Burst Camera by setting, if you go into the storage location settings, you can do something like append a certain prefix to the file name, or change the location that it's saving to as well. So that would probably be my recommendation, as opposed to doing it after the fact, because it sounds like already you're having to do a little management after the fact, and that's kind of the pain point here.
Yeah.
This might just save you some time.
Exactly. And I think that there are other little ways around it, like the chat room's buzzing with other comments, but somebody in Tweeg in the chat room made the point that if you're managing the photos in your camera very closely, you just empty the main camera folder before you go out, take your pictures at the location, then every picture in that folder is from that location, and pull them off. You don't even need a third app. It's just you gotta manage your folder, closely.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting challenge, though. I mean, I wonder, that's sometimes those arcane, random, number-generated file names can be. I'm one who become addicted to sorting just by date modified or date created or whatever, and remembering where I was at a certain day and a certain time, and then using that to find a whole burst of pictures. But there's got to be easier ways. So
absolutely.
If I were a professional that was doing this often, I would just take them. Not do it with my smartphone. I mean, I would take them maybe with my smartphone, but not process them and so forth and manage them. I would just use something like Photo Mechanic on the computer and get it to do all of the fancy things that it can do with organizing and renaming and all those good things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a number of ways to do this, absolutely.
Yep.
I hope one of those helps, Jonathan. There you go.
Excellent.
Let us know.
So time to thank another one of our wonderful sponsors. And earlier in the show, Jason was talking about having his Galaxy Nexus for about a year and a half, and he might be due for a new phone. If he was due for a new phone, there it is. If he was due for a new phone, he could trade that phone in a Gazelle and get some cash for it. You could apply that cash towards a new phone like the Samsung Galaxy S4 or that fancy HTC One, which is coming to Verizon, which I strongly recommend to anybody on Verizon. And Gazelle is a great way to start by getting cash for your existing phone. So all you got to do is go to gazelle.com. You enter in the type of phone you have. You answer some questions about the condition and that sort of thing. And they will give you a quote for how much your device is worth and how much they'll pay you for it. The great thing is that quote then locks for 30 days. So it's not the kind of thing where you enter it, which has happened to me in other sites before and drives you crazy, where you type it in, you get a quote, and you walk away, you think about it. 2 days later, you come back and the quote changes. Nope, on Gazelle, it's locked in for 30 days. So you can think about it, you can mull it over, you can talk to your friends, you can write an email into All About Android, ask us what you should do. Hopefully we'll answer the email, and then you can go back, and then you can cash in the quote and get the cash for your device and go buy that new phone you've been drooling over. The great thing also is that when you do decide to pull the trigger on your Gazelle quote, you can get paid either by check, via PayPal, or you get an extra 5% if you let them pay you by Amazon gift card. So if you're buying, if you're not even going to use the cash to buy a new phone, you just want to buy something else, you can buy it on Amazon, get an extra 5%, which is awesome. So Gazelle, they're taking back devices, including phones, tablets. You can return, sell back your iPad, your Galaxy Nexus, Microsoft Surface, Asus tablets, whatever you got, Gazelle wants to get it. So go to gazelle.com right now and get an offer, whether you got a Samsung phone, HTC phone, LG, Motorola, BlackBerry, iPhone, iPad, or any other Apple products. With Gazelle, you get paid in cash. All right, it's totally risk-free. Don't forget that 30-day guarantee on the quote. And also, when you return the device, Gazelle will wipe your data absolutely for free. So you don't have to worry about somebody getting your hands on your data from having your phone. They will wipe it. They want to be as trustworthy as possible. Gazelle has paid over $100 million to over 500,000 customers so far. That shows how easy it is. So if you in time to upgrade for a phone, you're crazy if you don't return your current phone to Gazelle and get some cash for it. Go to gazelle.com and check it out today. Thanks, Gazelle, excellent, for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, thank you so much, Gazelle. And they've really opened it up to all sorts of tablets and everything now. So
there's really no need to – I mean, I've had stacks of hardware. You know what I mean? Like, literally at one point, I had like three or four phones stacked up, and I'm like, I got to return these to Gazelle. So
yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right, let's waste no more time. Let's get into apps.
So finally, Google has answered the call to millions of Android users who have been begging. We went to Google I.O. and we just heard how disappointed people were by this. We talked to people. We get a lot of email. We get a lot of voicemails and calls about this. But finally, Google has launched the Cloud Print application for Android devices. Right? It's the app that you didn't know you needed. No, but so now if you have a printer that is connected to Google Cloud Print, you can now print from your Android device to that printer. So if you've got a tablet, you're sitting on your couch and you want to print out something that you've got, Cloud Print is the way to go. It's pretty cool, but let's be honest, it's printing.
Yeah. And you want to be able to
enter office pranks. That's what I want to know.
What was that?
Can I use this for inter-office pranks? I want to be able to print something on something.
Oh.
If your printer is hooked up to Cloud Print and you have an Android device, you can prank away. Go for it. We have found a solution. Awesome.
Just make sure it's hooked up and make sure it's compatible, because not all printers are actually compatible.
Exactly. Not all printers
are compatible. They have a list. Yep. If you go to the link that'll be in the show notes, twit.tv/AAA, you can get to a list that kind of lets you know if your printer is compatible.
They've got,
and if it's prankable.
Brother, Canon, Dell, Epson, FedEx, Office, HP, Kodak, Samsung, they're all in there. So and the app is available up in the Google Play Store, and it's free because it's from Google. So cool.
Excellent.
Yeah, part of the thing we were talking about last week about how Google is just disconnecting all of its like its native apps, like, you know, keyboard and Gmail and kind of being able to give people the Google experience, right, without having the pure Nexus phone, you know, or pure Android. It's nice to see them continue to spin out their individual apps into Play Store updates.
Yeah, and this was long overdue.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a bunch of other quick kind of app updates, just a lot of kind of updates going out this week. Falcon, the Twitter client, I believe Ron's top Twitter client.
I love it.
Falcon. Yeah, Falcon Pro.
They changed their icon.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, it freaked me out.
The other update is that they hit their 100K Twitter token limit again. This is the second time. So they've reset the key. So Ron, did you when you launched the app, did you have to...
I did have to re-log in. I got the message saying you had to reset your key, and I had to re-log in. I was able to log in. I panicked, though, because I don't remember when it updated, and for some reason I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get in because of the keys thing. So, yeah.
Right. You only get 100,000. I don't know. This is such a weird – I mean, I think it's great that Falcon is sort of pushing the envelope and challenging Twitter and being like, well, what are you going to do about it? I mean, every time they keep hitting the limit, they reset the keys, and then they basically lose inactive users. You have to sign up again within the 100K limit again. I'm kind of waiting for Twitter to lower the hammer and be like, this isn't what we meant for you to do. like when we met 100K, we met 100K, not, you know, 100K every few months. Totally. Good for Falcom for being so successful that they keep hitting the limit. I hope that this actually kind of leads to some change about this, what I think is kind of a stupid policy. But there you go. So if you got Falcon and you want to keep using it and you haven't gotten new tokens, go ahead and do that. Little update to Skype. They had a video messaging feature, which has been in preview status for a while. They took it out of preview status. It gives you the ability, both on Android and on desktop Skype, to record a video message and then send it to someone, basically in Skype chat. So the feature's a little bit buried. I think you have to tap on a contact, and then there's a menu to video message or chat them. And so you can record a little video. So this isn't live video conferencing. This is just kind of like sending someone a YouTube video, a recorded video. And finally, Dragon Mobile Assistant, which I noticed has never been in the arena. So maybe
never been in the arena. No,
this may have been a missed opportunity. I should have maybe made this my pick this week. But Dragon Mobile Assistant is a voice activated kind of assistant app, and it got an update this past week. It now auto detects whether or not you're driving and goes into driver mode. It added email dictation capabilities. You can with your voice dictate an email, create a new message, and it automatically reads back Facebook newsfeed and notifications activities, which must be a pretty compelling read. I haven't actually had a chance to play with Dragon Mobile, but it got quite a bit of play in the press this week. Have any of you guys tried this to replace voice actions or any other Siri-like apps on Android?
No, I haven't. I haven't used Dragon. I've heard a lot about it, and I've heard that it's good. It would take so much to pull me away from what I already use.
It's a paradigm shift.
Exactly. It would have to be like everybody saying, oh my God, it's got this really great thing that you just can't do with voice actions already. And I haven't seen that yet, but it looks slick enough.
I have a lot of friends who use Dragon just for dictation on the desktop, like for writing and stuff. But I haven't heard from anybody who's on the phone yet. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if it was always on and I could just talk to it and say, phone, give me directions, and not have to press any buttons,
yeah,
then I might remember to do it. But otherwise, I just forget to do those things.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you mentioned that, because LG, it didn't end up in the rundown, but LG, there's some news that's kind of leaking out that they have a device that they're going to unveil sometime in the near future that will do just that, that will actually be always looking for that kind of hot word or something, and then allow you to do voice commands for things like driving, right? Because even when you're in voice command mode and you're driving, there's still a little bit of that screen interaction that seems to seep in there, and their hope is to kind of eliminate that a little bit. I always wonder if that's the case. Like, how does your processor, you know, how does that affect your battery and kind of drain on your device? I don't know.
To be always listening for the hot word, like the activation word.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. At least with glass, you just look up, right?
Well, right. With glass, you have to kind of activate it, right? And of course, like privacy nuts are also like, oh, great, I have an app constantly listening to everything that comes out of my mouth, waiting for the activation word.
Totally, totally. So we seem to we talk about these guys a lot when they have a new offering for Android. But Marlon Thompson at the All About Android community on Google Plus actually posted that Humble Bundle for Android 6 just released today. He says, yes, more games I'll never finish playing. But seriously, this is a great bundle. Broken Sword is beautiful on the Android device. Who says Android don't got game? And so, you know, those of you who don't know, Humble Bundle is basically a pay what you want approach to getting just a nice kind of arsenal of games right off the top. They're DRM-free, cross-platform, and all the proceeds, or at least a portion of the proceeds, go to support charity. So it's just kind of a cool way to, you know, feel like you're doing some good. There's that's right, Oregon Trail, which I think I featured
Oregon
in the arena
Trail
months ago. But it's a great kind of throwback old-school style game. Just a bunch of really cool games here that you can get, I think, right now. Where does it show me the price?
$4.69. So here's the deal. So $4, if you pay $4.69, you will get all the games in it which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 awesome games.
And sometimes they end up opening it up, you know, after they reach a certain point to another one.
Yeah,
so you've
got 13 days left. You got 2 weeks left to purchase in this Humble Bundle, and I wouldn't be surprised. They'll add in another layer. And if you purchase the bundle today, you still get what they unlock. I love the Humble Bundle folks. I'm actually having lunch with them on Friday, so I'm excited to hear more about what they're doing on the Android side of things. So I will report back. But there's some good folks, too. By purchasing this, you get to support the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Child's Play Charity, both two Excellent. Charities that I have donated to before in the past. So they're good folks.
Excellent. Yep. And Pulse, by the way, is a pretty interesting-looking game as well, kind of a music, music-related creation game. So, anyways, always like to kind of give them a shout out.
You also unlock the soundtracks to the games in MP3 and FLAC.
Oh, neat.
Which is so all you FLAC enthusiasts out there. There you go.
All you FLACs.
Yep. I know you're out there.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's get into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, let's see here. Last week, we had 4 apps in the arena, and yes, finally.
I knew it.
I dug myself up out of the ground. I've lifted myself off the ground and finally got a win with 3D Image Live Wallpaper.
Oh, dang.
It's the live wallpaper that gives you a little bit of that parallax kind of effect that you see on iOS 7, or at least that we saw on the iOS 7. What's up?
Before the show, Valet was in third place by at least 5 votes, and now my app Valet is last by 1 vote. So
pushed out.
India failed me.
Oh,
yeah. India failed.
Yeah.
You.
Next time.
I thought I was in last place, and now I feel like I got made a little bit of a bump.
Little vindication.
It was a good pick, Jason. That was a really good
3D Image Live Wallpaper. Wallpaper
is great. Long name. Great
there
app.
We go. Yeah, it is a little bit of a long name. RadarScope got 2nd place with 25%. Draft 3rd place 12%, and Valet 4th place at 11%. Right there. I mean, literally, it's one right vote there. That separates.
I did get a lovely email from the developer of Valet thanking me for highlighting it and offering if we have any suggestions to let him know as he wants to make it better. So,
great,
it's cool. So,
that's awesome, right? Yep. Developers that really kind of get in touch with the people that are using it
it's happening more and more. To be honest with you, we're getting more and more feedback from the developers of the folks that we're talking about these apps in the arena, which means we're getting out there, which is awesome. So
yeah, that means people's apps are getting seen by a lot more people.
Hopefully,
that's kind of the point. So, well, Ron, you were the loser.
I was the loser.
So you go first.
Well, I got to admit, before I get into my app, it finally happened. It took 114 episodes where I stumbled across an app in my daily routine, just doing my life, had a great experience with it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it in the arena. And someone had already done it already.
Yeah.
So it took 114 episodes for me to finally hit one where I was but luckily I have a whole backlog I was able to tap into. And this is actually an app that I wanted to show last week, but I showed Valet instead. And this is actually a pretty cool game that I discovered that hasn't, I don't think, it's really gotten really broken out yet. Hopefully exposing it here in the arena will help it break out. It is called Word Kick. And I will show you here. It is basically a fun Boggle-esque game. Based on words, it's designed very pretty, very prettily, somewhat hollowy, kind of updated kind of Android style. And basically what it is, I'll go to the how to play for the tutorial. But essentially what happens is that you're given a word and there's a target word and then you're given a word to start with and you can change one letter at a time and you need to get to the target word. So I'll show you how it goes. You can sign into Google Plus where you can share your scores and your achievements. So
that's a good tapping into the new
The new Google Plus, Google Play kind of integration. So I'm just going to do a casual mode for now. There are 3 different play modes, but so here we go. It's going to load various dictionaries, and so here it's telling me I need to change the word game to time. So I've got game, and I need to change it to time. I can only change one letter at a time. So I'm going to go change this one. I'll change it to a T. And it's a little spinner. It's hard to do when you're diagonal. All right, and you push it up. And then I'm going to change that to... Now, the catch is the word you spell has to actually be a word. It can't be nonsense. So if I do that, I just did it in 2 moves.
I see. So now, that first word that you did, yep. if, Yeah, if the, I understand.
So here, okay.
I was like, how is this hard? You just change letters.
You couldn't have done gime, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. So I'm going to do that here. So here I need to change the word seat to back. So I'm going to change that to, well, I can't change it to beat. Well, now let me do this. I'm trying to lose and I'm winning. So I need to seat to back. So I'll just do, I do that. And it's going to say, nope, you're not a word. And it kind of flashes it in red and makes you go back to do it. Now, if for some reason I can't figure it out. Yeah, if I can't figure it out, there's this little light bulb up here, and that can give you a hint, and it will tell you what you should change it to, and change it to beak, you know, and it helps. It kind of helps you along.
Oh, cool.
So if you're into words, if you're into wordplay, if you're into crosswords, that sort of thing, it's a fun little game. There are other different modes, so I'll go back to the how to play to show you what the modes are. But and for some reason, there's that lag we were talking about. So in challenge mode, you have a limited number of moves to solve each word, and then you've also got the clock to worry about. And then time trial is basically spell as many words as you can before time runs out. So I'm going to go do the time trial, and it's going to give me, you know, I've got 2 minutes to create as many words as I can. So it doesn't really, you're not really trying to get to another word, but you're just trying to spell as many words as you can. So three different game modes keeps it kind of fun, keeps it kind of, you know, kind of different. Looks great on the tablet. Looks great on your phone. I was playing it on BART this morning, getting very frustrated because I'm not a very good word person, wordsmith. It's free in the Android store. It's in that sweet spot of 1,000 to 5,000 downloads, so we could really make an impact here by you all going and downloading it and checking it out. Yeah, it's a pretty cool, neat, pretty game. The most thing is that what got me about this was the design is just really, really elegant. So Word Kick.
There excellent. I like it.
Nice.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, well, what's the hard?
Yeah, it took me a second because I was
why is it so hard? You just change the letters until it says the thing.
Right. No, but you can only do one at a time.
Right. And it has to be an actual word that you're changing it to.
Exactly.
That's kind of the complex, more complex part about that.
Yep.
Awesome. Word Kick. One word. Check it out. It's free. I think all of our apps actually this week are free. And that's no small feat when there are five apps in the arena. Let's go to number two here. Bill, we have you down for an app that, you know, some people have probably heard of but haven't seen on the tablet yet. So let's show it off.
So this is the Expedia app. Actually, you know, I do a lot of traveling. And I don't use Expedia a lot, but I had heard a lot of good things about their app, and I'm always looking to see people doing really good, solid Android apps. And I pulled it up, and it's just really, really super well done. I was actually looking mostly at the phone app. The tablet app apparently looks awesome too.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I was playing around with. Do you have the phone up? The phone is.
Here, I'll work on getting that installed while I show this off. What are some of the cool things that you've kind of been doing with it?
The it has a really awesome little scrolling view on the phone app that has a kind of a side by side hotel and flight view, and it's just really, really incredibly well done. And when you tap and look for flights, it has wonderful animations going between things, and it's just really beautiful. One thing that I really tickled me, if you just search for I searched for a flight from Atlanta to Miami, say I wanted to go on a vacation to Miami. If you do that search, there is it actually shows you a little animation of of the window of your plane on the outside, and you can drag the shade down, up and down as it's searching for your flights. So it's just really, really, really beautiful and well done.
Excellent. So, you know how we were talking earlier about slow down on devices. My Galaxy Nexus is totally doing it, but I finally got in. Okay, so let's see here. So let's do a live flight. Oh, yeah. So this totally looks different than what I was seeing on the tablet. That's pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
So you do getaway flights. They have kind of a completely different approach to them. There we go. All right. So where was the departure? What were you saying again?
Yeah, I did. It'll probably go start you out in SFO or something.
Yep.
And then go somewhere else and then choose a departure and arrival dates and then just search for something.
Here we go. See how slow that is? Isn't that crazy? All right. We
have a Nexus 7 here, and it's not doing that for the
rest. No, it's not your app. I'm telling you, this is my device. It's been going crazy. Been going crazy. I just need to get a new one. All right, so we're loading flights. You got this nice little
view. Grab the shade, quick.
Grab the shade.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you closed it. And then, of course, it closed. Sorry about that. There we go. Okay, awesome. So they've really spent some time not only giving you, obviously, a good way to search this information, just kind of nice little eye candy as well. It really does kind of look pretty slick.
Yeah, every screen has a really wonderful... See the transitions?
Yeah. Something? That's nice.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I was really impressed.
Excellent. Apparently, I'm going to Honolulu. And let me tell you, that's exactly what I need. So I'm really happy that you chose this app because it made the decision for me. Cool. Well, I was playing around with the tablet app when I saw that you put it in there just for the bigger screen. I'll show that just real quick here. Just, you know, lays everything out really nicely for you. I'm sure, you know, it has a lot of the same functionality, but it's just kind of blown up a little bit more. And gives you kind of an easy way to search through and obviously maneuver through the maps. You get your points on the map once it kind of has the results, and you can kind of dial in and get the photos of every place, see more details, all that kind of stuff. So awesome. I love it. Very, very well designed. And I love that the phone and the tablet have their own distinct kind of
experiences.
But they both are extremely functional. So cool. Awesome. So that's Expedia. You've probably heard of Expedia before, but check out the app for booking your travel. Gina, we'll go to you next, and I'll try and keep up. I think I have it installed on the tablet. Hopefully the tablet is okay
on
this one.
I think it works really well on a tablet. Yeah, right. So I was trying to kind of break my habit of always choosing sort of productivity apps, calendars, and to-do lists, and all that kind of thing. And I wanted to just go with something really fun and easy. So my pick this week is a game. It's called Blendoku. It's kind of like Sudoku, but for colors. Really, really, really super simple app. So look, okay, Jason's got up on the screen there. So the goal of the app is you get a bunch of color blocks, and you just have to arrange them in order of the shading, basically. Like that's all it is. You just sort of drag the colors onto a grid and arrange them kind of in order of what the shading. So drag down that dark one. Uh-huh. Do you have any others there?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So put them in order of like what color comes after the other. Exactly. So that dark one will go toward the end.
I gotcha.
And yeah, exactly. Oh. And then, right, exactly. So you just finish that level. So this is the easy tutorial. This looks weird and maybe a little boring. In truth, it's one of these perfect, like, I've had a long day at work. I'm just kind of like taking a lunch break, and I just don't really want to think. And there's something really kind of fun and compelling about matching up colors. I'm not much of a designer, but it really kind of makes you think about shading and palettes in a kind of new way
and
see how colors get arranged. And basically, you you drag the blocks over and you get perfect if you do it all in one shot. If you drag it over the palette and then you move it around on the palette, then it's not perfect. And you can see the time it took you to arrange the colors versus the world and other players. And so Jason, you're doing the tutorial right now, and this is really, really simple, just kind of one line. But as you progress through the levels, they get pretty hard. It's different shapes, not just a straight line, and it's shadings that go from all kinds of wild and crazy colors. Yeah, I don't know if you can unlock. Okay. Yeah,
I see. So, you have to go through the tutorial to get to the
You have to go through the tutorial in order to progress.
So we're going to watch you do all 25 levels.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so now we're going to need a little bit.
So that's something a little different, right? Oh. So that's like a box formation. So it's a little different. So you have to really kind of look at the colors and be like, where do these fit? What works? I live here in San Diego. It's really sunny here. You really can't play this in the sun. I mean, you really can't do a lot of things on your phone in the sun. But because you have to really pay attention to like subtle shading differences, you really want to play this someplace where you can see the screen very clearly, particularly the darker colors. But just really fun game for, just playing really, really super simple, mindless kind of time waster, but fun because it gets you to pay attention to colors and see how well you can do against everyone else. It's a pretty popular game. It looks like installs have gone down, but they're over 500,000. I hadn't seen it.
I'm starting to get lost.
Yeah. He hit the wall at level 17.
Yes. Suddenly it ended up in a cube, and this is not easy. Like there's no obvious move here.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Yeah. So you want to kind of put the beige next to the beige and the blue.
Yeah.
I feel like you can go play this in real life at Home Depot.
Let's just see. No.
No, maybe the dark one up top and then the blue next to the blue. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
All
right.
So, yeah.
I love it. That's great.
Productive. It's not the most complicated game in the whole world, but it's kind of nice. I just want to take a break and have some fun. It looks great on a tablet. Whoa. Works really well on the phone. Just kind of fun.
Wow. And those later levels look intimidating.
They
I
look
can't
intense.
Believe that I was getting stumped on the tutorial. I'm that guy.
Well, we talked earlier about what today was like. So.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So you gotta pass.
I'm on cold medicine.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
You are on cold medicine.
Yep. Phew. It affects my sight of color. So good. Excellent.
All right.
So that is Blendoku.
And
that is free as well. Awesome. Great. Great game. All right, Brian, I will attempt to show off yours as well. Take it away. Tell us all about the app that you picked.
So my app is for a service actually called SilverCar, which I'm really excited about the existence of it. I would like to use it someday, because it's cool. It's basically a combination of like Uber and Zipcar. You go to the airport or wherever the SilverCar happens to be, and you rent a silver Audi A4. There's a flat price per day. It's fairly reasonable compared to car rentals for luxury cars. And you can choose your city and dates and times and all that, reserve the car, go and get in it, and never talk to a human. Don't have to worry about upsells. Nice concept. The app's pretty simple, functional version of what you need to do to get that to happen. It could be better. I think there's a few Android-y things that they could do to be more in line with the design guidelines and so forth. Overall, a pretty decent app. I haven't been able to use it to actually use the service and go to the car and so forth, but I assume that works because people do rate it fairly well.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at their website. It looks like they're only in Texas. They're in Austin, Dallas, and Houston.
Yeah.
To start with, and then
that's pretty cool. As both a Zipcar and an Uber user, if they had this in San Francisco, I probably would be all over this.
Right, I feel like a rock star every time I use Uber, and this would just be worse because I'd be driving and feeling like a rock star. And
it's a dangerous combination, right there. Excellent. So this is called SilverCar. Yeah, I had never heard of it, but that explains it. It looks like they're kind of starting off in Texas.
Yep.
and possibly opening it up. It's very easy to use, I got to say. It's easy to kind of pick through.
They're backed. Their investment backers are Austin Ventures, so that explains it. So they're Texas-based, so that's probably why. But a couple of years ago, Uber was just San Francisco only, and now it's slow. And same with Lyft. Lyft was San Francisco only, and now I was in L.A., and I saw the Lyft pink mustache driving around LAX. So I was like, oh, wow, they're expanding. It's always fun to see these car apps, a real-life app. Oh, look, you unlocked a car via QR code. That's interesting. But it's interesting to see these develop and then spread. So
yeah, it really seems like we're hearing so much more about these things recently. Only 10. What's that?
Disrupt it all, please. It all is terrible. So.
Yeah, tear it all down. Let's build it up again.
Only tangentially related, my daughter, my three-year-old daughter, once noticed out on the street a car with a pink mustache. And she asks about them all the time now. She wants to know why all cars don't have pink mustaches. So, so there you go.
That's adorable.
Maybe every car needs a mustache of some sort.
Maybe she's onto something. You should book a Lyft with her, and she can learn about how the Lyft drivers never shut up. Sometimes
any of these services.
See, that's the balance. Lyft is a little cheaper, but you got to talk to the drivers, whereas Uber, they'll leave you alone. It's a little more expensive.
So I see.
That's the antisocial guide to ride sharing apps. So there you go.
Excellent. I always go where the mustache is. So if a car's wearing a mustache, that's just what I pick if I did that. Okay, so I picked a game, and it's a game that kind of takes me back to a time when I was in high school and I would go into the computer lab and play on the internal network, at lunchtime, and we'd all play artillery with our little tanks, and it was all connected through the network in there. And it was just, it was cool because I hadn't really played that kind of interconnected game before. This is a game, it's solely kind of on the device right now. It's Pocket Tanks. You've probably heard of it. It's a game that's been around for a really long time. And it finally got ported to Android, I think back in December. And it's just a really good kind of version of Artillery. So here we have it. I'll just go ahead and hop right in it. You can play one or two players. It is turn-based with the device. I would love for them to get to the point to where they could kind of tap into Google's kind of new game services and allow you to do this online between two people, because Artillery is a great game when you're playing against another actual person, right? So you can, you know, you can name your name if you need to, but I choose my tank, choose my level. They have... So this version, this is the free version. You can upgrade for $4.99 in-app to get the total 295 weapons that you can get within this game. But you still get quite a few, enough to make the game pretty fun right off the start. I'll hit random, and it automatically gives everybody kind of a random option of the weapons. So you've got your tanks on both sides of this hill. It's total kind of old school graphics, kind of reminds me of the VGA days on the PC. And basically, so here I am, right? And I can select my weapon if I want. Let's see here.
What's Crazy name? Van.
What's that?
Oh, Crazy Ivan. Those Crazy Van.
Crazy Ivan. It's Crazy Van. Let's hop in the Crazy Van. Let's do, let's do Pile Driver. That's an impressive looking one. You set your angle. Right, so basically what I'm trying to do is, I'm in angle mode. I'm trying to get that guy. That's the computer that I'm trying to, and I'm really bad at my first one. You can either grab it up there and move it around, or you can do this. My first one is always horrible.
You need to get your bearings.
You need to figure out, like, what is this actually going to do? All right, so I've got it. I hit fire. Hopefully I don't shoot it right across
overshot
the screen.
It. Overshot. It.
Boom.
Look at that. Wow.
I know. It's a pretty, you know, hey, Pile Driver. It's pretty
here it comes.
Pretty dangerous.
Ooh, direct hit.
So it's pretty much a back and forth. And the fun in it is, of course, exploring all the different weapons and kind of, you know, getting in there and trying to see how you can effectively score the most points against the other person. I overshot it, so I'm going to go ahead and angle it up a little bit.
A little less power.
A little bit less power. Sure, why not? I'm probably going to undershoot it now, hit fire. And
I think you got him.
See, I'm really bad. I'm bad at when playing this in front of a lot of people.
Another direct hit.
See, so when I get hit, it kind of gives you the amount of points that they get. And different weapons will like hit with different kind of frequencies. So you get like 2 points, 2 points, 2 points. It's just kind of fun to watch it all mount up. Scatter shot. So what, I undershot it that time?
Yeah.
Let's just add a tiny bit more power and see if that was
enough. I think the angle. All right, yeah. Yeah, boom. Nice hit. There you go.
And I got it on the way down,
nice.
Too. So, you know, there's just a ton of different weapons in here, and it's just fun. It's total turn-based.
He went high. Whoa, direct hit. The computer
you can also
is
move,
very good.
Right? You can also move.
Oh, nice.
So sometimes they'll throw a weapon that creates a wall.
Yeah,
you can't shoot around, so you might want to move out of the way of it, or you might want to blast through the wall. I had a lot of fun with this as a kid, and so it was kind of cool to discover that it's on Android, and you can get it, like I said, for free, and it's totally fun for free. You can also upgrade $4.99 through an in-app purchase. That gives you 295 total weapons, and it gives you continuous support if they add, you know, as they add new features and everything and new weapons to the arsenal, which they just did recently. A couple of months ago, they added a bunch more. So they're continuing to kind of evolve and build upon this thing that was really popular years ago.
Very cool.
And I just find it a lot of fun. That is Pocket Tanks. So there we have it. 5 apps covering the spectrum this week. WordKick, Expedia, Blendoku, SilverCar, and Pocket Tanks. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to AAAPoll.com/114. That's AAAPoll.com/114. And early results are in. Looks like Blendoku and WordKick fighting for first right off the top. These early results, though.
Yeah, they're misleading.
They're very misleading.
Well, Blendoku is running away with it, so they're super misleading. Super misleading.
Oh, yeah, so misleading. I mean, don't trust that Blendoku is ahead.
You people who downloaded the episode or watch at a later time, don't trust these early results. Trust us. Get the app that you like the most. Don't worry about the early results.
Clearly, Blendoku is going to run away with it. Clearly. Yeah.
And make it so by saying so. excellent. All right. Great stuff. Next week, who do we have on the show next week? J.R. Rayfiel. Oh. And he's from Computer World. He actually writes a lot of really cool stuff for Computer World. He's going to be joining us next week. But as for this week, we are just super stoked that you guys got to join us. Bill and Brian, thank you so much for coming on with us and talking about programming, Android programming.
Glad to do it.
Oh, man, it's been a blast.
So, you know, we kind of talked about it a lot earlier in the show, but at the end of the show, we give all of our guests a chance to kind of plug whatever you have. So any final things you want to point people to, anything that you want people to do?
Ooh,
well, yeah. Check out, not do, because that could be nefarious.
It would be crass to say buy our book and take our class.
But you should do that.
We can do that.
Yeah, I'm going to do that anyway. We'd really love to see you in class. We'd really love to hear your feedback on the book. We tried really hard to make something awesome. So check us out.
Excellent. And what was the, Chad, can you put up the lower third just real quick so that I can actually read it? There we go. Tweet or Google Plus with hashtag BNR Android. You might win a copy of the book that we got right here. This huge, huge book. We have
600
right.
pages of awesome.
Yes, exactly. New book smell and all. Awesome. Well, thank you, Bill and Brian. We really appreciate it. It's awesome having you on the show today.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. What you got other than a big book in your hand?
I'm jealous. Bro. I've never written a book this thick. But
have you written a book?
Just about. I mean, it's never been collected into a book form. Okay, but if you took everything enough. I've written over the past 20 years in magazines and websites, I probably have written a book.
Fair enough.
I should collect that. I should do that. But I do work for a company that puts out books every Wednesday. Go to imagecomics.com where you check out all the great comic books at Image Comics, and check out in early July there'll be some cool digital stuff announced for Image Comics. So if you're into the digital stuff, check that out. And you can find me at about.me/RonXO. Links to my Twitter. Ah, that's my huge face. Links to my Twitter and my Facebook and Google Plus and Instagram and all that fun stuff. So my enormous face all the time. Judging you.
If you need Ron's enormous face, now you know where to go.
I know where to get it. About.me/RonXO. I really need a new photo.
Gina, what you got?
I actually just pushed out an update to my Android app this week.
Yeah,
it's a to-do list that syncs with Dropbox. You can check it out, todotxt.com. It's got a background sync with Dropbox now, and it's got adjustable font sizes, and we've got a couple of really cool new features in the pipeline as well. So if you get it now, you'll get the push update with the new stuff in the next couple of weeks. And I also co-host This Week in Google, which airs on the Twit Network on Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Pacific, and so I'll be on tomorrow. You should come watch that show as well. I'll be on with Leo and Jeff Jarvis, and you can see everything else I'm up to at ginatrapani.org.
Excellent. Thank you, Gina.
Sure.
Chad, what you got going on?
I don't even have a camera on me. I do a show called This Week in YouTube on Mondays now, and another show called OMG Craft, which is all about Minecraft. You can check it out. And if you're wondering who I am, I'm the guy who video switches the show.
He's behind this
right.
camera.
So
you don't have an about.me page we could pull up on your enormous
face? Okay, fine. Let's go see.
We'll
I
just show everybody my enormous face.
About.me/
Watch
OMG
his face be like,
is it some Minecraft version
it's probably,
of about.me?
Yeah, oh,
of
I'm course not even looking at it.
He's not even looking at
I'm
it.
I'm not even there. But I am vain enough to put my photo on there twice. So.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at your own photo.
Yeah. I was going, oh, wow, look at that bio back there. That's great.
Well, at least you know the trait that people remember when they see you. You're like,
right.
See? Yeah, I know it's all
right.
There.
That guy. Yeah,
that guy. All right, awesome. Thanks, Chad. And you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell or yellowgoldmusic.com. I promise to update something soon.
Oh, there it is. There's that photo.
Ooh, that's a pretty enormous face.
That's a classic.
All right, there we go. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. We love hearing your voicemails and finding out what you have to say about cool things Android-related. Email us at aaa@twit.tv. You can send us a link to a video in that email, and it magically becomes a video mail. Twitter, we are at Android Show. Google Plus, we're there, all about Android. Check for it, as well as the community. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can find our past episodes there. A list of all the apps we've covered in the arena. It's a ton of stuff there. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.